Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Mark DeForest of Gonzaga Law School, and he's going to be talking to us about a subject which most people don't even really think too much about, and yet it's one of the foundational concepts upon which our nation rests, and that is the concept of natural law. Mark DeForest, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, I'm glad to be here, Dr. Stans.
All right, fine. And you can only stay with us for half an hour?
Yeah, that's right.
All right, fine. So why don't you sort of begin by just telling our listeners what is natural law and why should anybody even be concerned about that? And, of course, as we develop these ideas, of course, we'll point out why this is foundational to our system of government. So go ahead.
Great. Natural law is a phrase that's used to describe a theory of human ethics and law and polity that postulates or proposes that human beings can come to a knowledge of moral order and moral rules by observing nature through the use of reason. And so the idea behind natural law is that you can look at the created order, and by examining the created order, you can come to certain moral truths that enable you to function in society and in your family and in your home. This is a biblical concept. When you look at the teaching of St. Paul in the Epistle to the Romans, he talks in chapter 2, verses 14 through 16, he talks about God writing the law on the heart of the Gentiles, and that Gentiles who by nature effectuate this law, attempt to live it out, are either acquitted or condemned by that law, this natural law written on the human heart. In the Hebrew Bible, in the Old Testament, in Psalm 119, the writer talks about how by observing the creation you can come to an understanding of the existence of God and God's law, and that nature declares this law and declares God's existence, and by observing it you can detect and discern what that the existence of God, and that there is a moral order and a transcendent moral order.
All right, fine. We're going to be back here in just a moment or two, and I want you to listen very carefully, because this may sound very erudite and philosophic, and yet it is so important to understanding the country that we live in. At one time this was taught, but no longer, after we want to dumb down the American people so they won't understand the foundation of our freedom. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course our guest is Mark DeForest, and he is a teacher, a professor at the Gonzaga Law School up there in Washington, and some of our listeners up there had heard him and said, you've got to get Mark on, because he can talk for hours on of course, this concept of natural law. Well, now why is that important? Well, if you go and you read the preamble to the Declaration of Independence, you find out that the reason that, of course, they were writing this declaration was because, of course, we were going to separate from the country we'd formerly been associated with, and, of course, the people of our nation had certain rights according to nature's God and nature's law. And so what were they really talking about? Nature's God and nature's law. And of course, the point that Mark is making is that, you know, if you look at the universe, I mean, there's a perfect order to everything. And I think that Mark will agree with this.
Oh, absolutely.
There's an order in arithmetic. There's an order in astronomy. There's an order in chemistry. There's an order in music. There's an order really in everything that we come in contact with. Everything is in perfect order. The periodic table. This didn't just happen by accident. There is an overall scheme. You look at the human body, and I can operate on a dozen different people. The anatomy is always the same. How could that be? Why? Because there is a designer, there's a creator, and if there's a creator, then did that creator not only create laws as far as physics and chemistry and arithmetic and astronomy and music, or did he also create laws as far as how we should survive? Would that be a fair statement?
Oh, absolutely. That there are... You know, we use the term, C.S. Lewis talked about this, we use the term natural law in a scientific sense. You know, the law of gravity, Boyle's law in chemistry, there's all sorts of natural laws that we talk about that govern physical processes, and we're all fairly familiar with that. But there are also moral laws that the Creator, God, has created moral laws, and that these moral laws are engraved in the human heart. C.S. Lewis, to go back to him again, he wrote a wonderful book called The Abolition of Man. And in the appendix of that book, he goes through and he lists and he shows how these moral principles really are universal to human things, like don't kill, don't steal, take care of others, don't covet. All of these kind of basic sort of Ten Commandments moral principles are really... shot through almost every culture and every type of social system that people have ever created, that they are in a sense hardwired into us, not simply a product of our environment or a product of secular law.
I'm going to have to interrupt you because we're going to have to take our last station. They'll be joining us here in just a moment. All right. Well, our guest is, of course, Mark DeForest, and he is from Gonzaga Law School, where he teaches. And of course, one of the things he, of course, talks about is the natural law and how, if you look at the universe, everything is in perfect balance. All the planets are in perfect balance. They follow certain basic rules. I mean, gravity attracts and certainly one body to another. I mean, there are certain rules as far as every aspect of our life. And if the rules for the inanimate objects, what about are there rules for the way men should live and society should evolve? And of course, it was this idea that man, who had created the universe, had also created laws and basic laws that, of course, were how men should live. And of course, they were laid down in the Old Testament in the Ten Commandments and the laws that were given to the Jews. But as Mark says, and I think that's Romans 2, what is that?
2 verse 14 through 16.
The St. Paul talks about how these laws are written on the hearts of the Gentiles. In other words, they know these laws. And, you know, it really is amazing. I think most people have an awareness of God. It takes an awful lot of education, going to college and taking all these courses in philosophy and Kant and, you know, certainly reading Hegel and reading Sartre and reading all of the Nietzsche, really to destroy that belief in God that is naturally in the hearts of everybody.
Well, and what's interesting, Dr. Stan, is if you really look at philosophy, Kant, for example, believed in God, and so did Hegel. It's really in the 19th century when you have this notion that the universe suddenly arose by chance, that's when belief in God and in moral law really started becoming eclipsed. Before that time, even Enlightenment philosophers, people like Descartes or Spinoza or Leibniz or any of these people, they had very, very intricate theological components to their work. You know, they may not accord with biblical orthodoxy in many instances, but they definitely had a sense that if you looked at the natural world, and if you looked at the human heart, you could determine that yes, indeed, God existed, And so this really is part and parcel of Western civilization, this idea of natural law, this idea of discerning moral order and the transcendent source of that moral order, namely God, by observing the natural world. I mean, this goes all the way back, as we've talked about before, to the Greeks and to the Romans, and then through the medieval period, and then in the Enlightenment, which is very much where our founding fathers were at home. That was the period where they were living, and you had people like Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson, who were very much part of the Enlightenment mindset and all of that. When they're doing their work, both before, during, and after the Revolution, to establish our country and to establish the political and social and legal structures that they created, so we could have a free republic. Those principles of natural law and divine providence, those were all right at the center of what they did. And so, you know, for many people who are born and raised in the church, or who come to come to Christ later in life, they have sometimes a suspicion about natural law, because they associate it with the natural man, or they associate it with an attempt to create a moral viewpoint outside of Christianity or outside of the church. And really what we're talking about here, though, is a very biblical concept, which is that God has engraved this law, his law, on our heart. He's given us that law, as you pointed out, in the law of Moses. He's given us that law through the scriptures so we can know it clearly. But alongside of the witness of the scriptures, he's engraved that same law in our hearts. So those same principles, you know, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not covet, thou shalt honor the Lord thy God, those principles are all engraved in our hearts. And, you know, John Calvin had a wonderful line about how the human heart, even the human heart that isn't part of the church, the heart of the person who's outside the church, still has a part of it that is oriented and longs for God. St. Augustine has a wonderful line in his Confessions where he says, our hearts are restless until they rest in thee, O Lord. And so this notion, and he wrote that when he was writing about pagans and about people who weren't within the church. And so when we look at natural law and this notion that we have these ingrained laws in our heart, and that these laws function to give us a sense of what's right and what's wrong, not necessarily that we're going to do that, just like we don't always fulfill the biblical law, oftentimes human beings fall far short of the natural law. Natural law is not a substitute for redemption. It's not a substitute for the gospel. It's simply a biblical way of looking at this law that God has engraved in our hearts to let us know what's right and what's wrong. And so this notion of right and wrong and of divine providence, of nature and nature's God, was absolutely central to the founding generation, and that includes founders, the few founders who weren't explicitly Christian. Most of the founding fathers, of course, were Christian. They were church-going, Bible-believing individuals who upheld the godly principles and order that were part of their lives here in the colonies. But even those founders who weren't Christian, for example, someone like Benjamin Franklin, who is the most secular of the founding fathers, the least religious, the least pious, the least overtly identified with religion, if you read his autobiography, it shot through with the notion of divine providence, that God is guiding him individually, that God should be prayed to, that God is concerned with individual life and each individual person, and that God has given rules and commandments to us that we can know by the light of reason, reflecting on nature. And so this notion of natural law and divine providence is there throughout the founding. Even in the least religious of the founders, you find this notion functioning. In fact, there's only one founding father that I'm aware of, an individual named James Iredell, who was not really kind of a central founder. He was kind of an ancillary figure, but he served on the early United States Supreme Court, he's the only one that ever made a public statement that I'm aware of denying the natural law. All the rest of them, including people who are absolutely at the center of drafting our, and creating our form of government, all believed in natural law. James Wilson, for example, who's a founding father most people don't know about. He's not sort of in the top tier of the George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, John Adams tier of founding fathers. But James Wilson was one of the prime movers at the Constitutional Convention, and he was one of the first justices of the United States Supreme Court. And he was very, very influential during his life in terms of kind of setting the trend of jurisprudence in the early Republic. And James Wilson wrote a wonderful book called Lectures on Jurisprudence. And it was a series of lectures he had given at Harvard University on the topic of jurisprudence. And he grounds his lectures, he grounds his work on the notion of natural law. And he sets that out and says that this is really the principles and the concepts that our republic is founded on, that undergirded not only the Declaration of Independence, but also the Constitution of the United States itself. So absolutely essential stuff when you get into talk about, kind of the underlying principles of our democracy and our republic.
And, of course, it was, if you go back and you read the Declaration of Independence, it says, when in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitles them, then a decent respect to the opinion of mankind requires that we should declare the cause which impel them to the separation. So, I mean, this was foundational to the very beliefs of our founding fathers, and it is fascinating that you talk to the average person today, and they have no idea where these ideas come from. They don't understand the idea of natural law or of nature's law. They don't know that certainly these actually date back to the time of Aristotle, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. And part of the problem is you know, the educational system in many respects has moved far, far away from what it was at the time of the founding. If you look at the sort of education that the founders had, most of them were strongly steeped in the Bible, but the Bible was viewed almost like a primer, that it was sort of the first thing that you would learn how to read. And of course they would be using the Authorized King James Version, and so they were grounded, and they had that really solid biblical knowledge through the King James translation. But then in addition to that, many of the founders received what we would consider to be a classical education. They were taught Greek and Latin, and they read these individuals, philosophers like Aristotle and the Roman jurist Cicero, all of these both of whom are just pivotal natural law theorists. They would read these people in the original languages that they wrote in. And they really had a much stronger training in moral philosophy and in theology than even people in graduate school today usually receive. And so they were really, it was really kind of part of the air that the founders were breathing. I mean, as a generation, they had an educational component that was really something that is very difficult for us to replicate today, particularly in public education.
Yeah, it certainly is, where they intentionally dumb down our children, teach them not to read, and of course they know far more about sex than they do about Shakespeare. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Mark DeForest. We'll have just one more short segment with him before we have to let him go. And then, of course, we'll welcome your calls here at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Have you ever wondered about the boys we left behind in Vietnam and Korea? Did you ever know that we left 25,000 American boys behind in Russia, in Siberia, at the end of the Second World War? Have you ever wondered what really happened in Oklahoma City, what really happened with TWA 800 and the right down of the eastern coast about a year ago? Well, ladies and gentlemen, all of the subjects are well covered in a fascinating book
by Fred Roberts entitled The Medusa File. Call 1-800-5-HIV-MORE, order The Medusa File. Actually, Craig Roberts was a police officer working on the Oklahoma City bombing. Now, this book has been suppressed very effectively across America, and it's self-published, but I promise you that there's no other book I know that will give you more contemporary history, frightening history that every American needs to know. Call 1-800-5-HIV-MORE now.
Hello, garlic lovers. This is Radio Health journalist Bill Sardi to talk to you about a breakthrough in garlic technology. It's called Alamet. You know all the healthy reasons to take garlic, but isn't it time you got your money's worth? A recent study found the 24 leading brands of garlic pills provided little, if any, allicin, garlic's primary active ingredient. Try Alamex, which is the only odorless garlic supplement to provide pure allicin, a full 180 milligrams. That's the power of 15 fresh cloves of garlic. Alamex isn't available in stores, so call 866-405-4000. That's Alamex at 866-405-4000.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time I just want to mention to you that in uncertain times as we live in, and I will tell you that sooner or later there are going to be more terrorist attacks here now, whether they will be like the last one that they knew was coming ahead of time and did nothing to stop, I can't tell you. But we are going to see some terrible times because America is involved in World War III. They're not telling you that. We fought the first couple of battles. We're permanently stationing our troops in the Middle East to inflame the passions of Muslims throughout the world. And, of course, remember, to every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction, a basic law of physics, and they call it blowback politically. And, of course, I fear that there will be some terrible disruptions of our society. You really ought to have a water filter so that you can get by without food. You can't get by without water. And if you have a big Berkey, you can filter water from a pond, a river, from a lake. And, of course, they're portable. They do a great job. They're what the missionaries have used for 150 years. Made of stainless steel. They filter through ceramic filters packed with activated charcoal. And they do a great job of cleaning up the water and giving you a fresh taste. If you have water you don't like the taste of, why you ought to think about a Big Berkey. They're $239 or nearly $279. We offer them for $239, and if you buy them through us, you get either a four-tape set or a video that we produce. Now, these are sold in every state except for California and Iowa. If you'd like to get something here in California, they have the Berkey Light. Same size. It's transparent. It's made of lucite, so you can see the water levels. The filters are called the Black Berkey. They work more efficiently than the Big Berkey, but the Big Berkey, of course, can be recleaned, whereas the Berkey, Black Berkey filters have to be replaced every 2 to 4 years, depending on how often they're used. They clean up the water even better, though, than the ceramic filters. These are $199. If you want to get lights, they're $259. But you get by fine with one for $199. Again, you get the four-tape set or the videos if you buy them through us. Go to our website at RadioLiberty.com and see them, and then give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and our guest this afternoon is Mark DeForest, who can only be with us a few more minutes. He is a teacher at the Gonzaga Law School in the state of Washington, and we're talking about natural law, which, of course, 200 years ago, everybody understood, but they've systematically dumbed down our people. They've convinced most of them that we're not a Christian nation, that most of our founding fathers were not Christians, and yet you ask them to name five people. They can't name five people. They couldn't even name five founding fathers if their life depended on it. And that's the problem we have today, is that they've dumbed down the American people, and they don't understand our heritage of freedom and why we're losing it. Would that be a fair statement?
I think that oftentimes that's correct, that the problem that happens in a lot of educational contexts is the push has been away from history. It's been away from philosophy. History, for example, in most public school curriculums has been replaced by social science, social studies, where they attempt to essentially replace historical study with sociology and other types of social science-based research, rather than studying the actual writings and teachings and viewpoints that were present, whether it's in the 1950s or the 1850s or the founding generation or earlier. And we really have had an eclipse in public education of the teaching of Western civilization, of world history, of European and American history. It's really gone by the boards, and if you're fortunate in your public school, you may have some American history taught in high school. But for the most part, in the lower grades, when children are really kind of formative and when they're really getting to really experience ideas kind of firsthand in the schools, they really don't focus enough on teaching an American civilization and Western civilization, I think, anyway. I mean, it's also the interesting thing is how weak a lot of our other educational programs like foreign languages are. In the founding generation, many of the founders knew several languages besides English, partly because America was an immigrant society, had a lot of Germans coming in and whatnot, but many of them learned French and Italian, not because they had to, but because they thought it was necessary to better understand Western civilization and cultures different from the English culture that was dominant in the colonies. And so, you know, what I always find ironic is oftentimes in public education, people talk almost endlessly about diversity and about how we need to experience other cultures, but we deprive our students of the tools necessary to really understand other cultures, language, historical analysis, and whatnot. So it really is a major problem, and you see it when it comes time to explain things like the concepts of liberty and natural law and the spiritual and historical roots of the American Republic. People just, you know, through no fault of their own oftentimes, are just completely out of their depth because they don't have the background to be able to really understand the concepts very well.
Well, of course, as you point out, they can't understand other people's cultures, but they really can't understand our culture because it's not being taught. And in fact, everything is being done to discourage, to defame, to belittle this idea. And of course, we're never told about the nobility of our founding fathers. Everything is done to demean them because there is an organized effort to destroy the foundations of a nation. And if you can destroy the foundations of a nation, then you have destroyed that nation. If you can destroy the religious faith of a nation, you've destroyed that nation. And there, I believe there is an organized effort to do that. I think they're doing a great job, not only through the schools, but through the media, and even many of our...
Well, and it has tremendous impacts when you look at, you know, it's one thing when we talk about, you know, the impact on our political system. And so the kind of individuals who wind up getting elected and the sort of decisions they make and the lack of public outrage about things that people should be outraged about. You see it there, but you also see it, I mean, what terrifies me as being someone who's involved in education, terrorized probably a little harsh a word, but what concerns me as someone involved in education and in professional education particularly is I have students who come to me from undergraduate education, people who have bachelor's degrees already, most of them with bachelor's degrees in political science and things like that, who are woefully unprepared to understand, you know, basic concepts about like how the government functions, that we have three branches of government, and I mean, it really is amazing. And so when you're talking about educating lawyers, when you're talking about educating doctors, when you're talking about educating people to be accountants, the lack of these basic principles, you know, it really shows up outside of the political sphere. It shows up in educating professionals
We're going to have to interrupt you, let you go.
Okay.
Mark,
right,
thank you so very much. God bless you. Really appreciate you being with us.
God bless you, too. Have a good afternoon. Bye-bye.
A very important book is called AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991 that tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working within organized medicine. The fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working within organized medicine, both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background of this epidemic to understand what is really happening politically in America today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I certainly want to mention some of the other items we carry. One of them, of course, is Phonopoly. It's a wonderful, wonderful program to teach your children and your grandchildren how to read phonetically, spell phonetically, and pronounce words phonetically. It's played like Monopoly. Of course, it's not one board game. It's five board games, two bonus games, designed to teach you the 40 sounds of the English language, and then, of course, the 12 basic rules of the English language. And this isn't just for children. I've had people 40, 50, 60 years old tell me how much they've really benefited from this. So if you are having difficulty reading phonetically and sounding out words and spelling, all right, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask about Phonopoly. Most of these programs are $300, $400, $500, $600. This is $139.95. And again, if you call, just ask for Phonopoly. And then, of course, we want to tell you about our Miracle-2 soap products. Now, we can't make any medical claims for them, but we can tell you that the people who use these tell us about all the wonderful things that they do and really how much they appreciate them and how much they've helped them. And so, basically, there's a soap and a moisturizing soap. There's a lotion, a gel, and a neutralizing solution, which some people take because it's very, very alkaline, and they claim that it helps them as far as their epigastric distress and heartburn is concerned, and cut down dramatically on the pills that they were taking. So all you can do is try them and see. But if you'd like to know more about the Miracle 2 soap products, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Or better still, why don't you just go ahead and order an introductory set of these various five items at a reduced price. Again, the product Miracle 2 soap, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Well, Dr. Stan back here. We're going to have open lines, and so if you'd like to give us a call, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY out across America, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And Fred is calling us from Salinas. Hi, Fred. How are you doing?
Yes, good afternoon. I have a statement and a question.
All right.
I watched a program Imelda Isabel Allende on it about a week and a half ago.
Uh-huh. Now, that is Allende's daughter, is it?
Wife.
Wife, okay.
And she was saying that it was when she was watching the planes go into the Trade Center. That was on Tuesday, September 11th, 2001?
Right.
Well, she was standing on the balcony of the palace in Chile, and it was Tuesday, September 11th, 1972, when the CIA-run coup against their government, run by Henry Kissinger, took over Chile. And she thought that was really quite interesting, that it was on the same day and about the same time of day in the morning that happened. And I remember reading or listening, I don't know if it was your program or some other program I listened to, that there was some other coup started on the same day, on September 11th.
Well, of course, it was George Bush, Herbert Walker Bush, who on September 11th, the year 2000, 1990, that was 11 years before the attack, had talked about the New World Order. But the 11 has a lot of spiritual and occult meanings, and specifically that the number 11, and they sometimes do things having a great deal to do with the spiritual implications. Most people sort of smile at that and say, "Oh, that's just coincidence. It's just coincidence that they have the Harry Potter books released at midnight on on June 21st, the beginning of the summer solstice. It's just coincidence that Earth Day is, of course, Lenin's birthday. It's just coincidence that we have a satanic symbol on the back of the Great Seal of the United States, on the back of the dollar bill, and that Admiral Poindexter put that up on his website, the DARPA website for the Total Information Awareness. Of course, they took it down because, of course, there was so much an outcry against the Total Information Awareness. People really need to get that wonderful book by Kathy Burns on Freemasonic and occult symbols, because they hide them in plain sight, and the numerology is just so obvious that most people can't see it. Of course, you know, it's really very interesting, Fred. Certainly, the CIA launched an attack on Allende as Marxist government. And yet, of course, it was the CIA that brought Fidel Castro to power and has kept him in power, contrary to everything that the American people have been allowed to read. And you can go ahead and read the book, The Fourth Floor, written by the American ambassador to Cuba at the time of the Cuban Revolution. And you'll find, and I've actually interviewed Ambassador Smith, so I confirm everything that's in that book. He tells how the American government brought Fidel Castro to power. And, of course, the Bay of Pigs was an ambush where the people were sent in, the one area in all of Cuba where they could not possibly hope to succeed. But the American people don't understand that. They're so gullible, and why they take out one Marxist dictator, or maybe it's one that just won't play along with the game. I'm not certain. But, the trouble is that we do topple governments all throughout the world. We toppled Mossadegh, who was the elected prime minister of Iran, and we toppled him in 1953. Then in 1959, we toppled the Shah, and we brought the Ayatollah Khomeini to power. And now it looks like we're about to topple the radical Muslim regime there and replace it with something else. You know, the trouble is that we don't have a right to tell other countries what to do. Because, of course, if we continue doing that, there will be a blowback. Anything else you want to say there, Fred?
Yes, I just want to ask you and anybody else in the whole audience, where did the numbers 911 come from for our telephones? anybody has an idea, I'd sure like to know.
All right, fine. Okay, maybe somebody will know that. Let's go to Roger calling from Allentown. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. If you have a question or comment, you agree, you disagree, why give us a call. But Roger, what was the statement you wanted to make?
Yeah, thanks, Dr. Stan. I did want to get to the subject of your guest. If I could first, you started off the show by saying, this may seem esoteric to a lot of people, perhaps unnecessary. But as I learned from, the postscripts in a number of Trinity Foundation books, like it or not, for better or worse, the ivory tower is the control tower of a civilization.
Well, unfortunately, the ivory tower now is not educating, it's indoctrinating. What we need to do is get it back to idealism, where we are there to educate and to give people an education in Western civilization, not, of course, a hatred for America and certainly induction into Marxism.
Well, we have to, just as with a constitution, we have to, for example, with philosophy, we have to understand, if not as exhaustively, at least better than those people we're dealing with, or we will be beaten, if not deservedly beaten, nevertheless. And, we have to know, for example, that the contemporary secular atheist philosophy has generated and degenerated inevitably into the in terms of epistemology or theory of knowledge, that is impossible to know anything for certain or absolutely. Now, you can maybe be a 3-year philosophy student at highfalutin U and never be apprised of that fact except by osmosis, I suppose.
Well, of course, this is really seminal to any philosophic discussion. Are there absolutes? And this is the basis of all philosophy. Either there is a God and there are absolutes and he lays out a set of rules, or there are no absolutes and, of course, man can do whatever he wants to. And, of course, really, if you look at this discussion, if there is a God, then he's going to tell you what to do, and he does through the Ten Commandments and the basic laws that he's written and that for Moses, and that he inscribed on the hearts of men. If you want to accept the philosophy of the serpent in the Garden of Eden, you go ahead, you eat the fruit of the tree, do whatever you want to. You are your own God, and that really is the very essence of what this is all about, Roger. Either you believe in the God of the Bible, and freedom is the ability to do what you should do according to his rules, or you become a disciple of the serpent, and then you say, well, I will do what I want, I will make up the rules. And of course, then there's nothing wrong with adultery, there's nothing wrong with stealing, as long as you don't get caught. There's nothing wrong with lying and cheating, and that's why we're in the mess we are today in the country, because we've lost our moral foundation, our religious foundation that once made America the envy of the whole world. And that wonderful quotation from de Tocqueville, and whether it's accurate or not, some people have questioned whether it is, but the story that he tells, that is told, about going into the churches of America and seeing them flaming with righteousness, and saying America is great because America is good, and if America ever ceases to be good, America will cease to be great. And you look at that decision of our Supreme Court legalizing sodomy and legalizing discrimination in our universities, and you realize America is no longer a Christian nation, it's no longer a good nation. Now, we have a system of laws based not upon the Constitution or God's law, but upon the attitudes of men and women, that you can do whatever you want to. And, of course, once you have that as the basic of your philosophy, then society will not exist very long. For as Jefferson had said so well, God, who gave us life, gave us liberty. But can the liberty of a nation be secure when the conviction has been forgotten that liberty is the gift of God? I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, and his justice cannot sleep forever. And I think everybody should look and see what's happening and tremble for America.
Dr. Stanton, the Christian position, of course, is that while we can't know or know God exhaustively, nevertheless we can know, however feebly, in part. And now on the legislating morality business, your earlier guest, I've just been reviewing Norm Geisler and Frank Turek's book, Legislating Morality, just in the last few days, and there are certain defects in this book. They fail to mention by what standard. It just says whose morality, as though it's to be arbitrarily chosen rather than a requirement for a transcendent standard. And your last guest sort of, I'm not going to say necessarily lapsed into that, but there's this erroneous claim that there's a universally accepted self-evidence of a moral law which is actually clear to everyone. I'm quoting from that book. And I just, that's not necessarily true.
Well, of course, I think that there is within the heart of everyone, at least at birth, a realization that there's a God. There's a wonderful book. It's written by Don Richardson, we've had on, and it's called Eternity in Their Hearts. And he was a missionary, and he was out working with these native people throughout the world, 17 years in the mission field and talking to so many other missionaries. And as he pointed out, most of the people, the savages living in, under terrible conditions, even the cannibals have a sense of that there is a God out there. But the trouble is, we take our young people and we send them to college, we destroy their belief in everything, and of course they aren't as smart as the cannibals living in the forest. They don't believe in a God. We've destroyed their faith. And of course, when you ask whose values, of course, it's not my values, it's God's values. And they're spelled out very clearly in the Holy Scriptures, and when a nation turns against those, why, of course, that nation will not exist for long.
If I could just please finish by saying, while our founders may well have referred to the laws of nature and nature's God and explicitly in a Christian context, that's not necessarily true of those who hold to a natural law theories today. For example, there's something called the Natural Law Party, which should be called the Nature Law Party, because you find out they're an enviro-wacko extremist group. God bless Dr. Stanton.
All right, fine. But, of course, in response to that, we have to understand the thought of the founding fathers. When they referred to natural law, they were referring to the writings of John Locke. And of course, he lived in the 1600s. And John Locke basically had written extensively about nature's God and nature's law. And he wrote about life, liberty, and property, and how they were the things that we were entitled to because God had given us this right to individual freedom. And those were the ideas that were carried forward into the writing of the Declaration of Independence. And of course, the man who was espousing this view of nature's God and nature's law at the time of the writing of the American Declaration of Independence and the Constitution was a man named William Blackstone. And his commentaries on the laws of England was the basis of American law for almost 150 years, entirely based upon the Bible. And so when they were talking about nature's God and nature's law, they weren't talking about these stupid people who try to distort our language and ideas today. They were talking about the law laid out by God. Thanks so much, Roger. And let's go to George calling from Toronto. Hi, how are you doing?
Yes, good evening, Dr. Monteith. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. So good to hear from you. How are things up there in Canada?
Nice warm night. No complaints.
Well, we've got a nice warm night here in California. So anyway, what can we do for you? What are your thoughts on this discussion?
I've always wanted to ask you this, and I never have, because you've always had guests that I always prefer to ask a certain question. But the British, the lost tribes in the Bible, the British Israelite theory, I was just wondering your comments on that, because personally, it's something that I do believe in, and I was just wondering what your position on that.
I hate to tell you, George, but I don't agree with that, because, of course, if indeed we are the lost tribe, then where does that leave the children of Abraham? And I don't believe that I'm Semitic. I don't believe that. I really think that the British Israelite concept, and for our listeners out there who don't know, of course, they talk about the 10 lost tribes or something of the sort, and some of them went off to Ireland, and that's why Jeremiah had gone there, and that's why so many of the Irish children are called Jerry, and of course that the scone of stone was basically had come from the Holy Land, and I just don't believe that, because I really believe it leads to anti-Semitism. I know there are many people, good people, who do believe in British Israelism, but I believe God has a specific place for the Jewish people in the latter day, and I think he has a place for us in his overall plan. So you want my opinion, that's where I stand.
Why does it lead to anti-Semitism?
Because, of course, then there's no place for the Jews as such. In other words, if we are the Jews, then who are these people over there in the Holy Land today? Now, some of them, admittedly, their forefathers came from Khazarstan. They are known as Ashkenazi Jews. But then there's the Sephardic Jews, who are the true descendants of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. So I know many people who are into British Israelism who are into anti-Semitism as well, because in their way of thinking, there's no place in their worldview for the children of Abraham.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay, fine. Well, thank you so much.
Have a good evening.
Okay, and you too.
Bye.
Okay, fine. Well, there are lots of ideas and thoughts out there. I hope that we're right. These are my views. You can disagree with them if you want to, but I will tell you why I believe this. And I have so many good friends who actually espouse the British Israel position, but they also have a very, very strong anti-Israel or anti-Zionist views. And there are many, many things wrong with what the Zionists are doing today. But I believe God has a plan for them. I believe he's brought the Jews back to the Holy Land for a specific purpose in this time in history. In fact, I think that we live in the most exciting time, of all times, because I see these things happening. I see the constant conflict in the Middle East, and Jerusalem is still almost the center of the world. And, of course, we're told in the latter days there'll be a great falling away in the church. And I sense this here with the church growth movement and the new gospel and the new music that is being taught in the Protestant church and the disruption of the Catholic church. And, of course, the Catholic church is really being torn. Its very heart is being torn out of it today. I believe that both churches have infiltrated many years ago, because the major enemy of what's going on are those two people who truly espouse the Word of God and, of course, understand the signs of the times. And the signs of the times really are exciting. And now American forces are over there in the Middle East. We have opened up the Third World War. American troops are to be permanently stationed in the Middle East. We, of course, are going to topple the Iranian government and probably the Saudi Arabian government and the government of Syria. It's only a matter of time. We can't tell the American people that yet. We're not going to tell them what the real plan is, but that's what it's all about. And if you doubt that, you really need to get to something we call Iraq, the Untold Story. We have this all in the syllabus. Or you can simply go to the Project for the New American Century website, which, of course, is at newamericancentury.org. newamericancentury.org. Get that material. Pull it down. Read it. And then begin to understand that there's a long-range planning by a small group of men who intend to establish a new international order with America, the leadership. And I don't believe that's God's plan. I think we're in for very, very difficult times because the good people have abandoned America and the church has abandoned America. And all we can do, of course, is try to educate people about what's going on. We'll be right back here in just a moment, here at Radio Liberty.
We have a brand new video today on the Oklahoma City bombing. It's called Oklahoma, What Really Happened. And of course, it consists of a lot of never-before-seen video footage. Now, it was seen in Oklahoma City immediately following the bombing of the Murrah Building, the blackout across America. And in this footage, you're going to see the commentators talking about the other bombs that were in the building at the time of the initial bombing. And we're told, of course, that Timothy McVeigh acted independently. And we're told many things by the media, but wherein does the truth lie? Oklahoma City, what really happened, it will give you the opportunity to see low, suppressed video footage of what really transpired. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for Oklahoma City and what really happened.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me just mention, if some of you are out there and you're having difficulty paying for your health care coverage, or if you don't have any health care coverage at all because it's just too expensive, we hope many of you may want to consider a Christian health cost-sharing program. It's called MediShare. If you'd like to learn more about this Christian health cost-sharing program, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. It could really save you many thousands of dollars every year. And, of course, will provide what you want, and that is security for your family. And then, of course, we want to mention some of the things we have. If you have not yet read Dr. Blaylock's book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, you need to have that because it's got an excellent section in it on biological warfare and the danger of biological warfare and what you can do to begin to protect yourself. Because believe me, if these things, the unthinkable should happen, and I believe it's going to. And if you're getting my newsletters, you realize that, of course, we've created all these new deadly diseases. And, of course, the stockpiles are there. And the question is, what are they going to do with them? Well, I will tell you that the major thing you can do is have maximum immunity. And that's what the book is about, how you can build up your immune system to be as healthy as possible. The book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. And then, of course, we carry Dr. Joseph Douglas' excellent book, Betrayed, and if you haven't read that, you really need to. It tells you about the men we abandoned in the First World War and the Second World War and Vietnam and Korea, and a nation that will betray its servicemen will one day betray its citizens. Call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life or Betrayed. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, this is the time when I have to remind our listeners out across America that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we're really dependent upon you for your help. And if you believe that we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political battlefield, if you agree with most of what we say, nobody's going to agree with everything we say, but if you agree that we have a unique position that needs to be heard, we hope many of you will decide right now to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And then, of course, for a suggested gift of $20 a month or more, you'll get our four best tapes of the month. You'll get our monthly newsletter. But more than that, you'll be helping us do what we do. 5 hours every day. And of course, we just picked up another new station, a 10,000-watt station in Bristol, Tennessee this week. So we'll be here, you know, in increasing numbers of markets across America. And it is beginning to make a difference. And then I want to mention, of course, if you would like a free copy of our newsletter, and our, of course, our June newsletter goes into all the new diseases that are popping up all across the country and why all the antibiotic-resistant diseases and, of course, why there's so much cancer, you'll want to get our latest newsletter. And we'll send you a free copy if you haven't had one before. Of course, we hope you'll subscribe, but if you don't, why, we'll send it to you. Give us a call at 1-800-5-448-9927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We'll send you a free copy of our newsletter, free of charge. And then, of course, we hope that many of you will go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com if you'd like to see pictures of the Big Berkey and of course, the Berkey Light water filters and learn more about them. And, of course, if you get them through us, you do get that four-tape set or video. But go to our website at RadioLiberty.com and, of course, look at the various items we have, including the Berkey water filters. Then, of course, we hope that many of you will pull down our newsletters, that you'll listen to our programs there, and you can hear us there throughout the day. And, of course, I will tell you how to get on the GCN live website and the other websites where you can actually listen to Radio Liberty 5 hours a day and not get anything accomplished. And then, of course, we hope that many of you will give serious consideration to getting a Phenopoly set for your children or your grandchildren so they can learn to read and spell and pronounce words phonetically. And you get that by simply calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you're interested in setting up an Institute of the Constitution and helping us take America back, helping us educate people about our wonderful Constitution and our wonderful heritage of freedom, why, of course, give me a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and I'll put you in touch with the people from the Institute. Apparently, they're working on the telephone lines back there, and they're not ringing through. But you get in touch with me, and I'll have them get in touch with you. That's for the Institute of the Constitution. And, of course, a 12-week program with about an hour a week, and you can learn far more than most people who are graduates of a law school do about our Constitution, because they're never allowed to read the Constitution. All they do is study case law and have very little understanding of the foundations of our freedom. So remember our number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, if you'd like to set up an Institute of the Constitution in your community. And then, of course, if you'd like to get a copy of my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, I recommend that very, very strongly. It will give you an overview of the true nature of the spiritual battle, or better still, get the Brotherhood of Darkness special. And that includes the book, the video, and, of course, a audio tape. So, again, once again, that, of course, is the Brotherhood of Darkness book, or the Brotherhood of Darkness special, and then Pray for America. Pray for revival, pray for our leaders, our ministers, but please remember to pray for Radio Liberty, for my ministry, for our provision, and our protection. And so until tomorrow, when we'll be back with you once again, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.